The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Seth Leibson Show. I'm John Hinderacher from Powerline, filling in for Seth today, and I'll be back again tomorrow and Wednesday and Friday of this week. We are joined now by Andrew McCarthy. Andy, thanks for being on the program.
John, every Monday I want to talk to you from now on.
Yeah, long time no see, friend. Last Monday, a week ago today, Andy and I spent the entire day together as he put on two wonderful presentations here in Minnesota, where I'm located, for the organization that I run called Center of the American Experiment. And those presentations were based mostly on your book, Andy, Ball of Collusion, which is a terrific book. If you haven't read it, I would recommend that you run out and buy it. It's this whole fiasco that we've lived through for the last 3 years, the Russia collusion hoax. The facts have kind of dribbled out here and there over a period of time from very different sources, and it's really hard to fit them all together. You know, it really is. It's like assembling a gigantic jigsaw puzzle, and Andy has done that and done it very, very well. So if you want to understand what you've been living through for the last 3 years, you got to buy Ball of Collusion. But Andy, what I really want to ask you about today is what's going on right now in Washington, D.C. The impeachment effort is moving to the Judiciary Committee on Wednesday, where there's going to be a hearing. What do you make of it?
John, I think the hearing on Wednesday is not going to advance the ball very far. In fact, I'm a little bit surprised that this is what the Judiciary Committee wants to come out of the box with, although maybe it's a telling sign of how weak the impeachment case is. Just to be clear about it, the hearing Wednesday is going to involve a panel, I think one panel, of four constitutional law experts. There may end up being more, but they're going to talk about the standards and the process that is attendant to impeachment, why it's in the Constitution, what the framers were trying to accomplish, what they were worried about, et cetera. And I just say that I don't think it'll do much for the case on impeachment, because having been a prosecutor in criminal cases for 20 years, you always want to start a public proceeding. This will be the first proceeding in the Judiciary Committee, which is the committee in the House that would write articles of impeachment, or if they're going to be articles of impeachment. You always want to start, I think, any litigation, but certainly anything where you're accusing someone of wrongdoing. You want to start with your best stuff, because at the beginning, that's the moment in time when the jury, or here the court of public opinion, has their attention most acute and most riveted. And I don't think you really, if I was trying to grab people's attention, I don't think I'd want to start out with a bunch of law professors talking about the Constitution. I'd want to get to the nuts and bolts of the misconduct. So I think it's a reflection of how comparatively trivial the misconduct is and how woefully short of impeachment it falls that they'd rather start out by talking about the impeachment clauses.
And, of course, they sent a letter giving President Trump a deadline 4 days off to say whether he was going to participate in Wednesday's hearing without giving him any information about what the hearing was, you know. And now,
right,
it collaterally on the side in various news reports, it is leaked out. What you just said, that is, that it's going to be a panel of law professors. And at least according to news reports, I understand one of them is going to be Larry Tribe.
Oh, I hadn't heard that yet, but I had heard four other names. I hadn't heard Professor Tribe yet. I'm very surprised by that, too, although I guess I understand Jonathan Turley is another of the professors, and they've both been very reliable presence out there commenting on the proceedings. I think, you know, maybe it's because I tend to agree with him more on this particular that I think Jonathan Turley's been a lot more measured in his commentary than Larry Tribe has. But
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, even if it's Tribe, and that means it'll be a little bit more explosive and snarky, I still think if it were my case, I'd want to start out with the misconduct if I thought I really had impeachable misconduct.
Oh, absolutely. I no doubt about that. And they may have changed their mind about Tribe, or the report I saw may have been wrong. It may be that they won't call him. If they do, I think it's kind of astonishing because Tribe in recent years has just gone around the bend. You know, I knew him when he was much younger, but he's gone nuts. And he's a guy who was, you know, calling for Trump to be impeached before Trump had even been inaugurated. And so I think they just opened themselves up to a lot of criticism if they try to make him one of their experts.
Yeah, I think, and that probably is why it's, I ordinarily, John, would advise the White House that since they've been complaining about due process, and a key component of due process is of course, the opportunity to be heard, that I would, under normal circumstances, not that there's anything normal about impeaching a president, but under normal circumstances, I would advise them that they should participate in the proceedings and make any objections about notice, et cetera, at the proceedings. But I noticed that in the White House counsel's letter, this is Pat Cipollone, who's the current White House counsel, he confined his assertion that they won't be appearing to Wednesday's hearing only. And I really don't think much is going to happen at Wednesday's hearing. So I think they reserve their right to participate if the House is going to start putting fact witnesses on. But for now, they're trying to ring the bell for the public about how grossly deficient these proceedings have been as far as due process is concerned. So that's probably a good strategy.
Yeah, I think that's right. And in his letter, he laid out some he asked a couple of questions, setting out kind of basic conditions for their participation, like they got to be able to cross-examine witnesses and they got to be able to call their own witnesses, right?
Right.
And so I think that's entirely appropriate that they want to smoke them out and say, well, before we tell you if we're going to participate, we need to understand participate in what?
Yeah, exactly right. And, you know, this goes, I think, to the fact that if you had misconduct that was in the ballpark of impeachable misconduct, this kind of sleight of hand would not be going on. Everybody would know what the allegedly impeachable conduct is. Here, the Democrats had to poll test bribery because they originally floated, you know, campaign finance violations and extortion and quid pro quo, and they didn't think any of that was catching on, so they finally settled on bribery because it poll tested well. But if you had real impeachable conduct, you wouldn't have all this procedural gamesmanship and legerdemain, and I think you would have a bipartisan process as you've had with prior impeachments, and nobody would be of a mind that the rules weren't fair. We could be having a healthy debate about whether this really merited impeachment or not. But there's a kind of a railroading aspect of this, mainly because they're trying to invoke what's the political equivalent of the death penalty for something that's more like a traffic ticket.
You know, I've seen, for example, in Cipollone's letter and other places, too, the claim being made that there's no precedent for the kind of one-sided proceeding that the Democrats are conducting in any prior impeachment, certainly no prior presidential impeachment. Is that fair?
I think it's entirely fair, and I think it's reflective of what Speaker Pelosi said before she got swept away on the passions of her own political base, which badly wants to hang the scarlet letter I on Trump, whether he's actually going to be removed or not. Pelosi, when she was more rational about this, said that impeachment has to be bipartisan, otherwise it's not worth doing. I quite agree with her about that. I wrote a book about impeachment in 2014, and one of the arguments I made is if you impeach under circumstances where there's not public support of enough fervor that it would move two-thirds of the Senate to the impeachment, to the removal column, that it's not worth doing because all you do is encourage the bad behavior. So this is meant to be bipartisan.
Andy, can you stay with us through the break?
Yeah, sure.
Terrific. We will be right back after these messages with more from Andy McCarthy. We are back now with Andy McCarthy talking about the impeachment proceedings. Andy, I'm chuckling because our producer has a sense of humor. I think that bumper music was a tribute to Peter Strzok and Lisa Page, who we were talking about in an earlier segment back in the news. So, Andy, so we're going to have this law professor panel on Wednesday, which probably doesn't amount to much. Have the Democrats committed at all, to your knowledge, to what happens after that? When, what, where, what's the next step?
No, it's amazing, John. It looks like they're trying to rush this through so that they can stay on the schedule that we've all at least heard filter out over the last few weeks, that they want to try to get this tied up and done before Christmas when Congress goes home for the holidays. And that really, I think, demonstrates that this is a rash action that's being controlled by the political calendar rather than an actual perceived need that we have somebody in office who's so unfit that he needs to be removed. And I'd underscore that by pointing out that the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals has now scheduled two cases to be argued on January 3rd, which bear on the impeachment inquiry and which are basically caused because of the proceedings in the House Judiciary Committee. Yet it's not even clear, even though the House is what started this ball rolling down the alley, it's not clear that they're going to wait for the courts to resolve these issues before they just haul off and vote their articles of impeachment. Again, if you were legitimately trying to conduct a valid impeachment proceeding, I think you would want to make sure that you didn't leave yourself vulnerable to the charge that you were so moved by the political calendar that you didn't even wait for the courts to resolve the issues that you yourself have provoked.
Andy, I've been assuming that we wouldn't be here if the Democrats didn't have the votes to support an impeachment resolution. I can't imagine they would drag us through all of this and then have the vote fail. Do you agree with that? I mean, is it basically a foregone conclusion?
I think it is. I think it's always possible that if the polls were to turn in a marked way against impeachment, that the Democrats who hold seats in pro-Trump districts could get cold feet and they could complain enough to Pelosi that she might decide to try an alternative measure like a censure resolution or something of the kind. But it just seems to me, John, at this point that the polls kind of look like the divide in the country. And if that's the case, you know, we're at about 50-50 and, you know, the Democrats control the House and they're probably going to move ahead and have their articles of impeachment. They've already decided they want them, even though they know there's no way the president will be removed in the Senate.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Andy, because I want to go to the Senate next. But what amazes me about the polls is that we've gotten to the point where the number of people who want to see Trump impeached is almost the same as the number of people who disapprove of his job performance. That's really unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, it's got, you know, I remember in the Clinton impeachment, his approval numbers were never higher than after he was impeached and when he was headed toward the Senate trial where it would be determined whether he was removed. And it was plenty clear that the American people didn't approve of what Clinton had done, but the thing had just become a proxy for whether you wanted impeachment and removal to happen or not. Maybe something like that is happening here as well.
Let's talk about what's going to happen in the Senate. What does that look like? The Constitution, obviously, not very detailed. As I understand it, Chief Justice Roberts would preside over what a lot of people describe as a trial. What does that look like procedurally?
Well, it really depends on the Senate. The reason the Chief Justice presides is more, I've always thought, ceremonial than anything else. Ordinarily, the Vice President is the President of the Senate, presides over big Senate proceedings. But obviously, the framers thought it would be a conflict and unseemly for the Vice President to preside over the potential impeachment of the President. So they have the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court do it, but he doesn't do a whole lot. It's really up to the Senate to decide what the procedures are going to be and even which articles of impeachment they'll hear. In the impeachment of Andrew Johnson, they didn't even consider all of the articles of impeachment that the House handed up. So the Senate really is in charge of how the case goes forward.
We're all reading tea leaves here, Andy, but what do you expect? Do you think there's going to be a major full-blown kind of proceeding, or does Mitch McConnell maybe shut it down in 48 hours? What do you think is likely?
I think he makes the Democrats pay for doing this. You know, one thing we know about an impeachment trial is that the senators have to sit there while it's going on as the jury. And we also know, John, that I think four members of the Senate are running for president, including Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, who were fairly prominent candidates in the race right now. They are going to have to sit in the Senate rather than be out on the campaign trail for as long as this takes. Plus, I think if the House is not going to allow the president to make his case, including getting into the stuff about the potential Biden corruption, getting into the stuff about the potential or the purported Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election, which I think is a very real subject. You don't have to believe that Ukraine did it and therefore Russia didn't, which is a discredited theory, to know that the Ukrainians were leaned on by the Obama administration to take actions that were helpful to the Democrats and did in fact do that. So
yeah, Politico has repudiated its own reporting on this. This was actually fairly widely reported at the time.
Yeah, well, I'm going to wait for the witnesses, and I have a feeling in a Senate trial, what McConnell I think is basically telling the Democrats is, if you haul off and do this ridiculous politicized thing, then we're going to have a real trial here, and you may be sorry.
Andy, is it just me? I mean, to me, it seems blindingly obvious that the Biden family took a $3 million bribe. I mean, Hunter Biden doesn't even speak Ukrainian. You know, he had no qualifications to be on that board, let alone to be paid $3 million for being on a board, which is, you know, that's usually nominal compensation. Isn't it pretty clear that there was some serious corruption here?
Yeah, I think it's I'm very persuaded by Peter Schweitzer's excellent book on this subject that it may not be prosecutable. You know, it may be that this is one of these cases where the people who write the laws write them in a way that their own glad handing and self promotion evades criminality. But it sure stinks to high heaven, and it warrants being explored. And I think, look, this is the big problem with the Democrats' impeachment push. If, as Adam Schiff famously said in his parody version of the Trump-Zelensky conversation, Trump had asked for Zelensky to make up information about his political opponent, that would have been a much more serious offense. Instead, it
but he
like
didn't
Trump
do it.
No, he asked for something that deserves to be investigated.
Andy, we're up against the heartbreak. Thanks so much for being on the show. And all of our listeners, buy his book, Ball of Collusion. We'll be right back after this. We are down to our last few segments here on the Seth Leibson Show. I'm John Hinderacher from Powerline filling in for Seth today, and I hope you've enjoyed the program. We have been talking exclusively about the news of the day coming out of Washington, D.C. I had a number of other stories that I thought would be interesting if we had time to get to them. And as it turned out, we didn't. We just stuck with the impeachment and some of the other stories coming out of Washington. Although if we have a few minutes at the very end of the hour, maybe I will bring one of them up. What I'd rather do, though, is take your calls. If you want to weigh in what you think about the impeachment proceedings, what you think is going to happen, how you think it'll impact the 2020 election, why you think I'm wrong in saying that this is a ridiculous attempt to cobble together an impeachable offense, give us a call. The number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You know, Andy McCarthy, before the last break, made a point that I want to elaborate on because I think it's awfully important, and it's something that has been underreported so far, not sufficiently commented on and recognized. And if there is a trial in the Senate, which I think there will be, it'll be an opportunity to shine a bright light on the doings of the Biden family. And there is a scandal. When you talk about this whole Ukraine situation, there's a scandal, all right. And the scandal, in my opinion, is that the Biden family took a $3 million bribe from Burisma, which is the big natural gas company in Ukraine, trading on the fact that at the time Joe Biden was the vice president of the United States. And not only that, he was in charge of Ukraine policy for the Obama administration. And so his views of events in Ukraine were very, very important, not just to the government there, but to companies there, including this natural gas company, Burisma. And so what they did was they brought on Hunter Biden and made him a director of their company. And they agreed to pay him $83,000 a month, a little more than that, for 3 years. Not for a long period of time, because he was of no use to them once his father was done being vice president, right? So they only paid him for 3 years, but they paid him $83,000 a month. Now, just think about that. Has anyone ever paid you $83,000 a month? I'm guessing probably not. And who is Hunter Biden? Why would he be so valuable to this Ukrainian natural gas company? Well, he's the son of Joe Biden. He's kind of a scapegrace. He was kicked out of the army for doing cocaine. He's had serious drug issues, you know, with cocaine and similar drugs. Just recently, it's been in the news about him hanging out in strip joints in Washington, D.C. He got hit with a paternity suit. There was a DNA test that concluded that he was indeed the father. Now it's come out that the mother was a stripper at one of these places that Hunter Biden frequented, and more of these stories are kind of tumbling out. So Hunter Biden is not a guy who has any particular business experience or acumen that would make him worth millions of dollars in any legitimate way. He doesn't even speak Ukrainian, right? So why would a Ukrainian natural gas company want to have on their board of directors a guy who doesn't speak Ukrainian, has little business experience of any kind and no experience with business in Ukraine, and has never worked in the natural gas industry? Why would you do that? And not only why would you make this guy a director of your company, which is a position that usually only carries nominal compensation? Directors typically get, you know, a few thousand bucks. It depends. It varies. But they don't get $1 million a year to be on a board of directors. So why do you think Burisma was willing to pay $1 million a year for 3 years to a guy who had no experience in their industry, natural gas, who had very little business experience of any kind and none in Ukraine and didn't even speak Ukrainian? Well, obviously, the only thing that made Hunter Biden worth $3 million is the fact that his father was responsible for policy on the Ukraine in the Barack Obama administration. That, folks, is a major scandal. And we're going to talk some more about it when we return from this break. Welcome back to the show. Before the break, we were talking about what I think is the real scandal of the whole Ukraine situation, and that is the fact that the Biden family took a $3 million bribe. This is significant, significant corruption in the Obama-Biden administration. And it was made possible by the fact that it was Joe Biden who was put in charge of Ukraine policy by President Obama on behalf of the administration. So he was really the key guy if you wanted influence with somebody in Washington, D.C. And so Burisma, this big Ukrainian natural gas company, went out and tracked down Hunter Biden, who's basically a ne'er-do-well with a cocaine problem. And a habit of frequenting Washington strip joints, very little business experience, no experience in the Ukraine, and a guy who does not speak Ukrainian and has never worked in the natural gas industry. So this Ukrainian natural gas company tracks down Hunter Biden, and they agree to pay him $3 million, $83,000 a month, plus some change, for 3 years, $1 million a year, to be on their board of directors. Well, why would they do that? Well, obviously, they did that because they believed, rightly or wrongly, but they believed that by giving Hunter $3 million, they were buying influence with his father, the vice president who was in charge of Ukraine policy for the administration. And you know, people who want to bribe office holders, who want to buy influence with office holders, they're not stupid, right? Nobody writes a check to the office holder. I mean, nobody's going to write a check paid to the order of Joe Biden $3 million. I mean, that's not how it's done. The way it's done is you write the check to a family member of the office holder, and you do it in exchange for services, which are either non-existent or nominal. And that way, it's a lot more difficult to bring criminal bribery charges. As long as Hunter Biden attended a couple of board of directors meetings, everybody could pretend business transaction and not a bribe. We're just paying Hunter Biden $3 million because, oh, man, he does such a great job on our board of directors, even though he can't understand a word we say. So that's how it's done. You don't write the check to the office holder. You write the check to a family member of the office holder in exchange for alleged services, which either don't exist at all or are nominal and are being ridiculously overcompensated. That is how bribes are paid in the modern world. And that's what we have here, a bribe. And sometimes you'll see people in the news saying, well, I think those payments to Hunter Biden created a conflict of interest. That is putting it too gently. That is giving way too much credit to the Biden family. A conflict of interest exists when you have two interests, and they're both legitimate, but they come into conflict. As a longtime practicing lawyer, you know, I had to deal with conflicts of interest or potential conflicts of interest all the time. Didn't mean anybody did anything wrong. It meant that two different interests, legitimate interests, may come into conflict with one another. That's not what's going on here. This is not a conflict of interest. There are not two legitimate interests here that may be in tension. This is what's called a bribe. And we know that that Burisma, the Ukrainian natural gas company, did in fact use Hunter Biden's name, did use the fact that Hunter was on their board of directors to get an interview with a high-ranking State Department official. We know this because an email thread has been made public. I think it was Judicial Watch that actually did the Freedom of Information Act request and got access to this email thread. And what it shows is that Burisma hired an international, very fancy international lobbying firm. I think it's called Blue Star Strategies, something like that. And Blue Star Strategies went to the State Department, again, to a high-ranking person at the State Department, asking for an interview with a certain person, again, at the top in the top echelon of the State Department, to try to defuse allegations, which were very widespread, of corruption in Ukraine involving Burisma. And this was the corruption that the prosecutor in Ukraine was investigating, and Joe Biden said, fire that prosecutor or you won't get your $1 billion, and the prosecutor got fired. That's the Burisma, at least among the elements of corruption that guy was investigating. And so we know from this email thread that I think it's Blue Star Strategies is the name, went to the State Department, asked for an interview with a high-ranking State Department person to try to debunk claims of corruption on the part of Burisma, and they specifically mentioned in the email the fact that Hunter Biden is on their board of directors as a reason why this senior official should meet with them. And in fact, they got a meeting in less than a week. So it worked like a charm. So there is a scandal here. It's a scandal that is about Burisma. It's a scandal that is about Ukraine. But really, it's a scandal that is about Washington, D.C. And it goes a lot farther than the Biden family. Why is it that these longtime politicians who all their lives work for relatively modest public employee salaries, why is it that when they retire, they turn out to be rich? It's kind of an amazing thing how that works, you know? Tom Daschle, either the majority leader or minority leader of the Senate for many years, never had a job outside the public sector, on paper, never made any money to speak of, retires, never returns to South Dakota, buys a mansion in Georgetown. Harry Reid, you know, how did Harry Reid get wealthy working for a senator's salary? It happens time after time after time. And this is how not everybody in Washington operates this way by any means. Don't get me wrong, but some people do. And the Biden family obviously does. And so if we have a trial on impeachment in the Senate, I think one thing that is going to come to light is when Trump is talking to Zelensky in that famous telephone conversation about investigating corruption. And at one time in that conversation, he mentions Joe Biden's name because this Burisma deal was quite notorious by that time. What was he talking about? What's the context? Well, this is the context, a $3 million bribe. And I think that if they have a trial in the Senate, and if Mitch McConnell decides to go all the way and have a full-blown factual hearing about the issues in this case, one of those issues is going to be what was going on here that President Trump wanted the new government of Ukraine, bearing in mind that Zelensky is newly elected, and he's a reformer. Ukraine was corrupt. Zelensky is the reformer who supposedly is going to try to clean it up. And that's what Trump wanted to make sure of. Is Zelensky a real reformer or is he just more of the same? So that whole story about corruption that specifically involves Joe Biden and his family is going to be a significant part of any Senate impeachment trial. We're going to go to a break. You got one more chance. If you want to be heard on impeachment or anything else, give us a call at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back to the final segment of today's show. You know, when we started out, I had a number of items on my list here potentially to talk about that are in the news, have been in the news over the last 24, 48 hours. And as it turned out, we didn't get to a lot of them because we spent the whole show talking about the latest news coming out of Washington, D.C., particularly that relating to impeachment. And it's been a very interesting conversation. I hope you've enjoyed it. I promise that tomorrow, though, we will break out of the Washington, D.C. straitjacket for a good part of the show and talk about some of the other things going on in the world that may, in time, prove to be even more important than the Democrats' shenanigans in Washington, D.C. And I guess the last thing I want to talk about in connection with what's going on now in the nation's capital is what's the backstory? I think everybody understands that this impeachment theory the Democrats have ginned up is kind of a second choice. You know, they wanted to impeach Trump based on Russia collusion, then that fell apart on them. So this Ukraine thing, they cobbled together as a fallback. And I think everybody understands that it's an unbelievably weak ground for anybody to find high crimes and misdemeanors. The idea that for a matter of weeks, Trump held up military assistance to Ukraine, which Obama never gave, you know, in more than a couple of years, and then said, OK, go ahead. Supposedly, it's a quid pro quo for the Ukrainians conducting an investigation, but the Ukrainians never investigated and they got the military assistance anyway. So I don't even understand why we're talking about it. Obviously, there wasn't a quid pro quo. And in any event, Trump wasn't wrong to want the Ukrainians to investigate corruption, including Joe Biden's corruption. He was right. That should be investigated. The fact that Joe Biden is running for president is completely immaterial. The corruption that occurred during the Obama-Biden administration absolutely should be investigated, exposed, and if appropriate, prosecuted. So there's just nothing wrong with that. So what's really going on here? The Democrats understand that they're riding a very weak horse. Why are they doing it? Well, I think they're doing it, as we talked about earlier, because they think that if they can generate thousands of newspaper headlines across the country that have got the words Trump and impeachment in the same sentence, it helps them. Some people who don't follow the news closely are going to assume that where there's smoke, there must be some fire. And they also know that they have an amazingly weak set of presidential candidates with Joe Biden still leading in the polls. That has to send shudders down the spines of Democrats who are desperate to regain the presidency. And so I think that's really what's going on. They know that they don't have a very good chance of beating President Trump at the polls, not if they play it fair and square. And so they're doing this really desperate impeachment gambit in hopes that they weaken Trump to the point where their own candidate can squeak his way through to victory. So that's all for today. I'll be back with you tomorrow here on the Seth Liebson Show.